Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of all ages. This is the Ramble Room, and we're here with Ken, Sarah, Diane, and I'm Joseph. And we're going to throw it over to Diane. She's got some more of that history lesson coming up. And over to you, love. What do you got?
Why, thank you. Well, we're just continuing on our very interesting history about the pre... What led up to the Revolutionary War? Why do those colonists have bees in their bonnets? We have established that a big part of the problem was the spate of taxes passed by Parliament that the colonists didn't have any say in. So things were being done to them rather than with them. And in September of 1774, 12 of the colonies, with Georgia missing, I don't know why, sent representatives to Philadelphia to take part in the First Continental Congress. They had a vague plan of showing Britain that the colonies were united in their grievances. So you can't fight, hopefully, you can't fight all of us. Though they didn't start out with a lot of cohesion as far as what they were going to do about it. Well into 1775, even after Lexington and Concord and the shot heard round the world, there was still a desire to try to come to terms with Britain and remain loyal British citizens. There were just always a lot of people who were saying, we can work this out. On October 14, 1774, the Declaration of Resolves of the First Continental Congress was signed by the representatives. The list of whereases in the Declaration delineate the colony's grievances with the Crown, and just as an overview, they were being taxed without representation in Parliament. They were concerned that an old law was being invoked that would allow colonists to be transported to England for trial for certain crimes rather than being tried at home where they were. And they complained that assemblies for deliberating on grievances had been dissolved. And these weren't infringements on rights that the colonists were angling for. This is what we want from you. We demand these rights. They were claiming the ancient rights of their ancestors. A key phrase is that the good people of the several colonies find themselves, quote, justly alarmed at these arbitrary proceedings of Parliament and administration. That's the end of the quote.
Arbitrary decrees sounds familiar over this last year.
I know. That's the point of these lessons. Oh. Do you hear history repeating?
Okay. Now I'm starting to understand.
Thanks for paying attention. In the Declaration, they resolve that as British subjects, they are entitled to life, liberty, and property. So that doesn't just happen to come up in the Declaration of Independence or in the Constitution. That's been a theme all along. Just as their ancestors were also entitled to those who first settled the colonies. They have a right to peaceably assemble, consider their grievances, and petition the king. The keeping of a standing army in the colonies in time of peace is against the law. So we talked about the Quartering Act last time. That's what they're saying. Wait a minute, why do we even have an army here? They aim to state such, quote, acts and measures as have been adopted since the last war, which demonstrate a system formed to enslave America, end quote. They list many of the acts we've discussed and then some, which is why I'm not reading you the whole thing. Taking all this into consideration, they decide that a non-importation, non-consumption, and non-exportation agreement faithfully adhered to will prove the most speedy, effectual, and peaceable measure. So on October 20th, 1774, the representatives of the Congress signed an Articles of Association. So this is where I really want to start making the correlation between then and today as you listen. In the Articles, they agree not to import anything from Great Britain or Ireland after the 1st of December. So this in October, they sign something that will take place in December because they have to have time for the Britain to find out about it.
Can you imagine how much Irish whiskey was sent over in that last few days?
Quick, import, import.
Hurry before it's too late.
Except that October to December, that's not a lot of time to make any decisions. And anything that got there after the 1st of December was dealt with not economically.
That's why they were throwing the tea into the harbor. Some people think it was rebellion. Actually, all they were trying to do was to make room for more Irish whiskey.
They were trying to make bathtub tea in the lake.
A little known hysterical news.
Tea will ferment eventually.
Yeah, but have you tasted it when it ferments?
With the right amount of fish poo.
It basically rots.
Mm. Rot tea.
We have to be careful with it. I don't know. You're the expert on fermentation.
Yeah.
Now, here, interestingly enough, they also agreed not to import any slaves after December 1st and to wholly discontinue the slave trade, just in case anybody's wondering about the racism of the founders.
Well, except that you can kind of claim that that's equally racist because they're talking about importing goods and they're like, none of those anymore either. They're still lumping them in the...
That's true. And I haven't researched this, but I'm kind of guessing that some of these guys were going, now here's our chance.
Yeah.
Because getting rid of the slave trade had been such a contentious thing for so long that they were saying, yeah, let's add that too, and then it'll be done. But it didn't work, so we had to go on another 100 years to the Civil War. The only power they had to enforce such an act was the power of public disapproval. If anyone was caught breaking the agreement...
We say no!
Well, right, they would advertise. Guess what Joe the grocer was doing? He was selling...
You don't want to know.
In the back room?
Yeah. And they said, we will not from thenceforth have any commercial connection with such a merchant. So... Hit them where it hurts, even though we don't have, this is not a law, we can't make anybody conform to this, but we're the representatives of the colonies, they sent us here to do this, and so we're all going to agree to work like this. So anybody who goes against it, we post your name on the, I don't know, in the common somewhere and say, this guy is selling things at an extra high price because there's a shortage, this guy has been selling tea even though we agreed not to do that. So
for a miserable time, try Joe's Grocers.
Mm. Well, there's a scene in that show Sons of Liberty that we were watching. It's a Samuel Adams was going around with his gang of hoodlums. Yeah.
Sons of Liberty.
But marking each shop that was loyal to the crown so that people wouldn't shop at those shops. And of course, that was quite upsetting to those people.
Yes, but it would be very effective, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm sure that it helps. There was also an underground black market kind of thing.
Would you say that it was cancel culture?
I guess they hadn't yet thought of just burning the place down and looting it.
Right.
I wouldn't say it was cancel culture. I would say it was the free market, but instead of having a social media platform where you could be like, P.S. Walmart sucks, they just write sucks on the front of Walmart.
That's pretty much what cancel culture is. So,
But it was against a tyrannical government, an actual tyrannical government.
Oh, so it was okay.
Government.
One of the things...
though.
What?
I disagree.
Ooh.
Because when you're talking about supporting a business or not supporting a business, that's the free market. People boycott things or whatever else. Cancel culture is silencing people who have an opinion. It's not the same thing as saying you shouldn't support the MyPillow guy because he supported Trump.
And they're also trying to make it illegal. These guys didn't have the power to make anything illegal. They were just, it was public pressure.
Right. Well, it was kind of like what they did to Chick-fil-A.
Right. What they have been doing to Chick-fil-A since Chick-fil-A opened.
Right, and I don't know why anybody would try to cancel Chick-fil-A because they are delicious. Anyways. But
that's a terrible first date, though, by the way.
That was the beginning of cancel culture for, well, not the beginning of it by any means, but it was a big part of it is to say, okay, well, they have Christian values. We can't support them because we're gay or the OPD.
So in this case, they have British values, and therefore we're not going to support them. The similar pattern.
Right.
But I still think boycotting and cancel culture are two different things.
I don't.
Pretty close to the same thing.
To me, cancel culture is trying to cancel out free speech. Boycotting is just trying to shut a particular business down because of their alignment.
Yeah, shutting it down is shutting down their speech.
This is kind of like, what is infrastructure?
Well, it depends on how you want to define that.
Right.
Oh, duh.
It's semantics, really. But anyway.
By the way, I just read a quote earlier that you will love. And it said, Joe Biden could be considered to be bipartisan if you redefine bipartisan.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
Well... I could be considered to be a man if you redefine what it is to be a man.
Precisely.
We are.
Then I would be in a gay relationship.
That's why I...
Then you don't have to redefine that.
That's the same thing that Orwell was warning about. He was so right. Words don't mean anything anymore.
I'm not sure if this has anything to do with tea.
They mean something. They just mean whatever you want.
Well, the only thing I'm suggesting is that is the beginning stages of cancel culture to sit there and say, okay... Don't shop here because, and people still have a choice whether to go there or
not.
Like whenever they boycotted Chick-fil-A, there was a line out the door for people trying to
but
get that.
But that's what I'm talking about.
God's
the difference
chicken.
Is when you boycott something, you also create this counter movement of, no, we need to go support them. When you cancel someone,
right, you just
their career is ended.
And I understand that. Yeah. That makes sense. That makes
another
sense.
Point.
Thank you for agreeing with me.
I don't completely agree with you. I just.
Oh.
I'm understanding what you're saying, and we can move on.
Oh, because you said so.
Men are talking, Sarah.
I'm closer to the buttons, so you better be quiet.
I wanted to make another point about something that you said, and that we need to keep in mind that through all of this up to a certain point, which we will talk about later, they were trying to very carefully not to be violent. So you said something about burning down people's stores and things. They were trying not to do that. They were trying not to do anything illegal. Even with the Tea Party, they were being very careful that they weren't nobody was stealing the tea. They were getting rid of it because it had to be gotten rid of, but they were not letting anybody take it because that would have been theft. They were not hurting anyone because they didn't want to, you know, be breaking any rules that way. Okay, so then in this declaration, then one of the resolves is has to do with they didn't want to hurt their fellow Britons unnecessarily. So they set a date for the non-importation part of this not to take effect until September, which is almost a year from the date that they signed this, because they want to give like the people who have been getting their rice from them and wool from them and things like that, they don't want to just all of a sudden cut them off and hurt the people any more than absolutely necessary, because they're not mad at the people, they're mad at the government. So this might be a funny thing to include in an official declaration, but they realize they're likely to end up with an overabundance of sheep if they quit exporting them.
That was my favorite part.
So they make a special plan to sell them at a discount to their poorer neighbors.
Do you remember the Wallace and Gromit movie where the sheep invade his house and every cupboard that he opens, there's a little sheep in there? Meh. Oh. Who ate all the cheese?
So I thought, I was going, sheep? Sheep? Well, okay, that makes sense, because they've been exporting wool and that kind of thing. But anyway, this is one of their ways of taking care of the people who are being hurt in the colonies by all these, the non-importation and the non-exportation is, we're going to have some people who need some food, so we'll take the sheep. They weren't talking about giving them away, but selling them cheaply so that poorer people could afford to eat. They also said that they would encourage frugality, economy, and industry, and promote agriculture, arts, and the manufactures of this country, especially that of wool, and will discourage every species of extravagance and dissipation, even down to the traditional excesses of funerals. So apparently it was a tradition to give scarves and gloves at funerals, and they said, we're not going to do that anymore, because they're trying to be economical, knowing that they're going to run out of stuff pretty soon.
And after that, funerals really fell off in attendance.
And now people show up with 6 dishes of scalloped potatoes.
You'd rather have gloves?
I'd rather have the gloves.
Oh.
Keep my hands warm in the wintertime.
I think that all you have to do that is put that in an obituary when, you know, at the bottom when they say,
bring gloves, not scalloped potatoes.
Memorials will be contributed to this and such, and you just say, Joe prefers gloves over scalloped potatoes.
Yeah. Sounds perfect.
One of the other points is that vendors of goods will not take advantage of scarcity. If they do, they'll be boycotted. So it's the same kind of thing where somebody, they said, we're going to keep the prices where they've been for the last 12 months. If anybody starts gouging, they're also marked and people don't go there. So we've been talking about the responsibility of liberty. And what impressed me about this was that they got together and said, we're going to do this thing because we so strongly believe in what we're doing. We're going to stick together and make sure nobody's taking advantage of anyone in order to show a united front and not hurt the poor people more than the rich people, make anyone suffer unduly. And they got together, and all the colonies were supporting Boston, who was the most hit by the non-importation and stuff. And this is one of the things that I've been frustrated with over the whole last year was, where's the group of people getting together and saying, we won't stand for this? Everybody's just on their own going, darn it, I don't want to stand for this. But nobody is with me. What if I get arrested? What if I get sued? What if I lose my business? I was very impressed with their organization. And I know it didn't work perfectly. There were lots of people. You know, it's the numbers differ, but there were lots of estimates of how many loyal Britons there were all the way through the war. Bad things happened to them because people got angry and they lost their property and that kind of thing, which will happen in a war.
It was a rational way of conducting a protest rather than an emotional way.
Right. Yes.
There was an awful lot of foresight involved. Okay, we want to do this, but this is going to be the consequence, and how do we head that off of the past, and how do we manage this? I was watching a documentary last night about Thomas Sowell, and one of the quotes that they gave from him, and this is not a direct quote because I don't have it in front of me, but he was saying, in economics, there's no such thing as a good or a bad. There's just trade-offs. So we want this to change with England ruling over us, but there's going to be a trade-off, and we're going to have to figure out how to manage that ourselves. But they did it as a unit. And that is what is missing in conservatives today, is that everybody's just on their own property going, yeah, let them come take my guns. Well, what about mine, sir?
Well, the left is extremely organized. So it's kind of reverse of what it was.
And like we've said before, not only are they organized, but they're very patient.
Right.
And we don't have that. One of my takeaways from that was that these guys were willing to suffer together. I like the quote from Benjamin Franklin later, which again is not an exact quote, but he said, we'll have to hang together or we'll surely all hang separately.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a state of mind that we're going to have to get into, is we've got to do this together if we want to keep our liberty.